I'm Gene Kansas. You're listening to Sidewalk Radio. We cover the arts, architecture, design, development, city planning, preservation. And today we're covering the past, the present, and the future of one of Atlanta's most significant cultural landmarks, the Claremont Hotel at 789 Ponce de Leon.
The building, Claremont building. Even though the Claremont Lounge is one of those features that is one of a kind anywhere in the Southeast, hell, probably not even the planet. But that building right there, it feeds us, the fact that we're in that structure. And it has all this history. And all the people that come and gone in that place, that building is just one of a kind.
It's an 88,000 square foot building, starting at the basement, which still floods. And the place is in disrepair and needs, on 88,000 square feet, needs anywhere from $10 to $12 million to really get the base building, like mechanical, electrical, and plumbing, and that up to code.
When I was a student here, it was this sort of mythic place that everybody had to pay homage to. So everyone makes a pilgrimage at one point or another to the hotel, and specifically to the lounge.
But the basement still floods. There's a fallout shelter there from the World War II days.
You need to definitely get somebody to bless that basement. I think every structure of that building was blessed but the basement.
Going up, you will go to one other level just below the main level, which would be where some shops and offices are, and laundry facilities. It's kind of like a half level up. And then you'd get to the main level, which is off-grade of Ponce, come into a really, really seedy lobby with plastic plants and horrible furniture. And this really was all before, of course, the place was shut down by Department of Health.
When we're working with historical buildings, something of the quality of the Claremont, which is a masonry building, it's incredibly well built.
And it is indestructible. You can't burn it down.
A sort of subdued system of ornamentation on it.
The city at one point wanted to buy it to turn it into a jail.
But you'd go into the lobby and you go to the check-in window where some of the staff has been there for over 20 years.
It's 31 years, but it'll be 32 years come next week.
There's rooms off the lobby. There are 124 rooms total. There's some singles, there's some efficiency, and then there's the big penthouse, which is, I don't know, about 600 square feet of just pure pleasure. You would turn on a faucet, which would have either brown or black water coming out of it. Cockroaches, beds that you definitely would not want to sleep in, but all of that somehow is remarkably charming about this place.
Where you have that sense of place, that gives a person a sense of security in the place because they're things that are recognizable to them at a physical and a spiritual level. And it evokes something different from a human being when they're in that kind of atmosphere, I think.
Our four guests today are Boyd Coons, Executive Director of the Atlanta Preservation Center.
Good architecture, in my opinion, has always been about its context.
Mike Gamble, tenured professor at Georgia Tech of Architecture and winner of the Claremont Hotel Design Competition.
We're constantly negotiating our way through any environment. And for me, architecture has always been about that sort of negotiation. You're going to discover patterns, and I call them rituals of use, the way in which people occupy space.
DJ, the de facto spokesperson and bouncer for the Claremont, he's been working at the lounge for about the past 15 years.
I started off doing bouncing a lot, but just mainly just to watch over people from doing anything out of the ordinary, what they're not supposed to be doing. Customers do get a little happy.
And of course, what would a show about the Claremont be without Blondie? An exotic dancer at the Claremont Lounge, an Atlanta icon.
Well, I'll just say it's destiny, because I never planned on being all that, but I knew I was going to be more than just a dancer.
The story of the Claremont Hotel begins way before the building was ever even there. It really starts with the story of Ponce de Leon and the area that at one time was farmland.
In 1900, it would have been totally rural, even midtown where we are now. There was still plenty of open land around it, but Boulevard had developed earlier, and so it would have been primarily residential where there were buildings. They would have been one or two story in scale. The most common type was what was called a garden apartment that really kind of responded to the Southerner's ideal of wanting to have a single-family house. So the Claremont is different in that it takes the model of an hotel and, you know, is sort of a high-rise monolithic kind of thing, although in its architectural detail it's still responding to those Georgian features and all that you'd find in a house. And the architect who built the Claremont, Mr. Butterfield, had been a draftsman in Neil Reed's firm, Hinch, Reed & Adler. They're the same firm that did, of course, Reed House, which was originally the Garrison Apartments. And Reed and other architects had been developing, trying to find a sense of style that would be appropriate and give us a city identity. I think he really formulated a mature taste that became sort of our Atlanta taste. And, you know, in my lifetime when I was growing up, that was sort of received taste. That's what you expected. And that phenomena at the Claremont is a good synthesis of really different cultures. The building itself probably represents a received cultural idea of this rather standard Georgian revival kind of phenomena that, again, would have been very much like what people would have expected to see in a wonderful house or in a reassuring bank building, and it would have been familiar, and it relies on proportional systems and a grammar of ornament that is part of a cultural continuum that goes back to Europe and that we all have come out of and have been produced by. And then you get this wonderful nexus of the lounge coming together there. And the Claremont really is a cultural phenomenon in both the architectural sense and in terms of its living culture, in the way it fits into the city and the way it makes a sense of place in that particular spot.
Just that corner of Ponce de Leon and Bonaventure, right there, when you're surrounded by homes and other businesses, you know. And all of a sudden, you know, you just feel that pull from his event horizon. You're just like, oh, man, I got to go here. The seediness that they think, you know, the oh, we're going to the Claremont. You think we'll be safe there? I don't care.
Ponce has always been a dividing line in the city. Ponce and North Avenue have traditionally been the place where streets change names, for example. And this goes back to the days of segregation in the city, where when a street crossed North Avenue, it would change names because people were concerned that they were living in different atmospheres, different on different street names. So Ponce has a long history. The Claremont has a long history.
Originally started as a motor lodge for families traveling through Atlanta, then became an apartment building, and then recently a hotel, the Claremont Lounge, which is the longest running strip club in the city's history. It opened its doors somewhere around 1965, had previous iterations of adult entertainment dating back to the 1940s. The Anchorage Club opened in 1947. It's been called the Gypsy Club, the Playboy Room, the Jungle Club, and then, of course, the infamous and notorious Claremont Lounge. There's a crazy new dance that's going round. Everyone agrees the coolest thing in town. You get a groovy movement from your toes to your scalp. So come and get away, they do the Yobi out, the Yobi out. Do the Yobi out. That was George Burton singing his smash hit, the Yobi Alp, and if you're completely dyslexic, you probably got it immediately. It's Playboy spelled backwards. The Playboy Club is a predecessor to the Claremont Lounge. This is Sidewalk Radio with Gene Kansas. To the side, then again to the other. The chuckle three each way, across from one another. You'll be out. You'll be out. Yay, you'll be out. My first impression, I remember the pleather bar held together by tape, some scotch tape, some, you know, duct tape, some gum. I remember the very, very matted.
Right then and there, that bar reminded me of my father's bar. Just outside of Charleston, in a little town called Ridgeville, South Carolina. And it just had that nice feel, you know, that nice, warm, earthy, you know, it just felt like it's been there forever. The smoke was just right. It just reminded you of good Southern love. It just felt really at home.
It was just like a little dive. It was just like a neighborhood bar, kind of redneckish. A lot of rednecks and bikers and just white-collar guys came in there. And some couples came in, and women sometimes came in. We never, you know, discriminated against single women coming in there. But they didn't have black girls at the Claremont when I came there. I think there had been a girl 10 years before me. But when I came there, the lady that owned it before liked me, and I've been there ever since.
The first time I noticed her on stage, and I said, she's a black woman, blonde wig. This is awesome. I love this bar.
So, I mean, I've been in showbiz, you might say, since I was a child, because I took ballet, tap, and jazz, and some of those shows travel, and you do different things. And I've been on TV when I was like 10 years old. So, you know what I'm saying? It's, you know, I'm kind of used to that. I'm not shy that way. You have to be. And the kind of stuff we put up with at the Claremont Lounge, if you're like timid and let people hurt your feelings, you're not going to make it.
When you notice this, the staff and the crew, everybody has their own unique signature or their personality. And the customers read off that vibe and just love it. You know, it doesn't seem like you go to most clubs when you see the mannequins, as we say.
You're known for a signature move.
I got many moves, but I guess I'm known for a certain little gimmick trick that I made up. Actually, a young lady did it before me, mm-hmm. but I take an empty beer can, Pabst or Budweiser, and crush it straight up and down, then tweak it a little bit.
Where do you crush it?
Between my boobs. And I tweak it a little bit, and then I crush it all the way down as far as it'll go. You know, it's just kind of a neat little thing. I didn't mean or didn't expect to be in the business this long, and I wouldn't want anybody else to be. But the Claremont Lounge is a staple in Atlanta, and it needs to stick around.
The idea behind our proposal for the competition would be to create another space that is potentially as intense as the lounge itself. So we chose the roof. And you could make a heaven-hell dichotomy if you wanted to. We were sort of thinking along those lines, but we imagined the roof as this really lush pleasure garden. We first thought that we would create about a 10-foot buffer of really dense plant material that would run around the entire perimeter of the roof. So when you came up the elevator onto the roof, you would be surrounded by flora, be confronted not only with the skyline, the view up there is quite good, but there would be this idea of a garden. And in the garden, we had proposed basically just putting 1 inch of water on half of the roof, so it would become this really dramatic reflecting pond. Just a simple sheet of water will take everything in that whole environment and double it. And the sort of programmatic proposal for the roof would be a wedding chapel. So in distinction to what's going on downstairs, we imagined a sort of Maybe it's Vegas style, maybe it's not. You know, it would be interesting to see how people would actually respond to that. Would there be a big demand to get married on top of the Claremont Lounge? We think so. And of course, there would be a little lounge up there too where people could come and hang out and have cocktails.
In addition to the roof, you also had a lobby that extended all the way to Ponce. Can you?
Yeah, exactly. That would be what we would call the second major move. If the first major move in a building the size of the Ponce, an architect gets one or two big moves in a restoration project. So the roof was the first. And the second move was to actually link the front door of the hotel back to the sidewalk. How do you connect a front door to the sidewalk at the Claremont? Well, you need a decompression space first. And we thought that when guests or visitors to the hotel stepped off the sidewalk, that they would come in to really wonderfully dressed hotel staff, where you would check in or basically announce your arrival.
And then, would this be like walking into just any type of lobby of a hotel? Or
no, we imagined it as a sort of lightweight box that would be flooded with light. So when you stepped off the street, you would enter into a conditioned space that would be really luminous. And directly behind the concierge, there would be a long bar. In fact, we called it a flirt bar. And a flirt bar is a simple concept where you take everything that would visually obstruct eye contact from one side of the bar to the other, and you put it below the bar. So as people are sitting there having their cocktails, they're facing one another. You know, that it really, it works. But that would be the idea, that decompression space that would join the existing front door of the hotel to the sidewalk would become a program space and a really sort of emotionally charged space. It's a way to acknowledge the history of the building without trying to add on to it in a pastiche way, or I think another word you could use would be Disneyfication. You know, to take it and make it something that's not real. Every urban atmosphere, every urban situation should be wrought with lots of complexities and contradictions. And I see the Claremont Lounge as a contradictory space that we would really want to hang on to.
Mike Gamble, tenured professor at Georgia Tech and winner of the Claremont Hotel Design Competition.
I kind of picture the city with lots of veins and arteries. And I think Ponce de Leon Avenue definitely has a big artery. And you clip some of that, and especially the Claremont. I mean, it just won't be the same on that strip.
Presumably, it would be one of the benefits of living in a city that there is cultural diversity and there is opportunity for an expansion of one's own universe through exposure to things one wouldn't know otherwise.
I love it when people just blindfold their friends or their parents, and they come right in, and you know, I'll check their ID and see what's going on, see how they feel, and make sure they're not too drunk before they come into my bar, and they unblindfold them, and the shock is just one of a kind. As if you were 6 years old and that pony that you never got, there it is.
And the Claremont Lounge, for better or for worse, whether you love it or hate it, is something that could not be recreated. It takes time to make a space like that.
The variety of people. You never seen that many eclectic people in one place other than a stadium, a sports arena or something, you know. But in a bar where all groups, all class, you know, moving in one groove, it's beautiful.
Without the people, the place means nothing. That building has been there since the 1920s and probably be around for a lot longer, but not all the people will. And there'll be a last song that plays, a last dance that's danced, the smoke will clear and the curtain will call. And probably sooner than later for one of our favorites, Blondie, and it's bittersweet, and she's had a great run. She's done a lot for the city, and she's really done a lot for herself. And what would you like to be remembered for?
My poetry. The beer can crush is just like a fly-by-night gimmick trick that I do, but a lot of people that know me from years ago remember. I used to recite poetry to the customers, but because of the engulfing cigarette smoke, I just give the poetry away because, I mean, you know, it really hurt.
Would you like to recite a poem to carry us through this session?
I wrote this poem probably nearly 30 years ago when I first came to Claremont Lounge, and I only wrote what I saw. And a lot of it's still true today. This is who I am, what I was, and what I will be, probably for some time to come. It's called The Late Night Review. She shakes and shimmies to the beat of the music. Her sultry look, with a cosmic gaze in her eyes, says she's only there for your pleasure. As the crowd sits around the bar, I see drunken cowboys tumble to the urinal, older businessmen try to look unnoticed, and young rowdy college boys chanting, screaming, and whistling at the barely clad bodies on stage. This is regular routine as glasses of cheer clink together along with smoke-filled stench clouding the room. Yes, they all want a little R&R that lets themselves unwind to forget their hidden misery. For outside the door lies their dismal reality to the troubles they must face again. I slowly sink deeper and deeper into the ambiance of this small but friendly place. As dollars flow and girls smile aglow, what are they really thinking? Another sultress approaches the stage to perform her erotic act, hoping someday she'll become a star and leave her troubles behind. But how many more nights will she think that? And how many more years will she be in the late night review?
This is Sidewalk Radio with Gene Kansas.